Am I hosting? Is he hosting? Is he asking? Okay. So let's talk about we're co-hosting, yada, yada, me, blah, 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 you, blah, blah, blah. Today we're going to talk about, I don't even know what the fuck you would call that. It's enunciated PISRA around here, which doesn't sound appropriate. Physical Information Security Risk Assessment. PISRA. So,
you want to do what in my building?
Right. Listen, not in your building, but with your building. I don't know. I mean, we could talk about that. Like, what does that mean? I guess we should say today we're discussing the best practices or strategy to protect. I'm trying to think of a better term, more strong, like, I'm going to say utility. But I'm thinking like, because it would be utility, because it'd be like the electric grid, mm-hmm. midstream, oil and gas. What the fuck is that called?
Critical infrastructure.
Critical infrastructure. Yeah. How do you assess a critical infrastructure? How do you protect that? What's the idea around that? And what are the points? Like, how do you make sure that that stuff that is very important to, you know, quote unquote, you know, public safety? How should someone go about protecting that? What are the ideas all the way from physical all the way to cybersecurity? How do those overlap? I'm just trying to think.
Yeah.
Sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay.
PISRA. Do we say PISRA?
Your podcast.
It's a light after dark. I need a shot. Let me really talk about some PISRA. There we go. All right. All right. I'm ready. I'll start if you're cool with that.
Yeah, I'm good.
Since I think you've been talking, like, how many is this, like, your third for the day? Probably fifth, sixth?
Just second for the day.
Okay, that's a lot. Yeah. I really hate doing podcasts. I really do. I hate talking. It's the worst. The worst. The fuck? Earthquake. Thank you for that, sir. We can see the little timer. I like how you can't see that. That's the best part.
Yeah.
Do you can you can you can make that the same, like duplicate that. Might be a little easier. Yeah. Hey, fuck it. Who needs a computer? Are we recording?
We're good.
Oh, okay. All right.
Robert.
Fuck you, Robert. Action. Hello, everyone. My name is Donovan Farrell, and thank you, and welcome back to another magnificent, amazing, secure AF podcast. I am a co-host today, and I have my esteemed juggernaut of the internet, Philip. What's up, Philip?
Not much.
What are we talking about today?
Critical infrastructure.
Critical infrastructure. Yes. So today we're going to go through like how to protect it, what it's about, what it can do to basically protect, I guess, the nation. I'll be all big about it, but we've had some pretty good projects we worked. We're going to go through and kind of discuss, you know, how to assess it from a physical attribute, a network attribute. And also, how do we kind of put our arms around that? Because I feel like it might be, I don't know, I'm going to say like the last frontier because everything's kind of taken a while to get there. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so, because those type of OT, ICS environments always been hands off.
Yeah.
You're going to break something. And in some cases, you could actually cause injury to people. So it's always been like, leave it alone. But, you know, one of the interesting things too is in recent years, CISA.gov or CISA has been bringing a lot of attention to that and needs to be protected. Yep. You had the one incident, was it the year before last or last year, where the water treatment plant was affected?
Yeah, there's been a lot of those, but yes.
Yeah.
And they're out there. I hate to be generic. And again, we're just jumping straight in. Like even Shodan, because I know if you don't know where that is, just go to it. There's a lot of like ICS stuff out there that's just open and it's legacy stuff that you can clearly communicate with. And it's kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, dump a little poison in water, you know, it could have an effect.
Yeah. I was speaking with someone recently that's a subject matter expert in that area. And they were saying based on their experience that OT or ICS security, the industrial controls piece of critical infrastructure is about 20 years behind of what our, you know, like our network security or other type of digital assets, the security of that based on that, because, you know, as I mentioned a while ago, it's always been hands off.
Yeah. And root still works. Root is still a login terminal to the ICS environment. So I guess, you know, we had the big pipeline that got broke into a few years ago.
Yeah, Colonial.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people that really kind of shook them. I don't know. I feel like it actually made a point, and I know it's almost like we're talking about the same stuff all the time, like waving our flags about, hey, don't forget to patch. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, we got breached. And we're like, what happened? They're like, we forgot to patch, right? It's like the same thing. But ICS, you said, like maybe even 20 years ago, critical infrastructure. I mean, from your opinion, like what effect did that have on, you know, people that you've talked to, the industry? Do you feel like that was a wake up moment, or do you still feel like there needs to be more that happened for people to actually start paying attention?
I think there needs to be more to happen, but it's good that attention's been brought to it. You know, like some of those attacks, like you mentioned, Colonial Pipeline, and then one of the water treatment plants that they were referring to as like Killware. But those are getting to be more common. And yep. One of the things we have to look at too is threat actors are using, you think of cyber warfare, what a better way to take out a country or parts of the country, regions, by poisoning water treatment facilities. And you may not even know it before, you know, X amount of people are affected.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then, you know, hashtag puts on, you know, tinfoil hat, or like having chemical plants explode, or train derailment, or random like animal feed people dying. Like that stuff can happen because that stuff is put on the internet. I'm going to give you guys, this one's hilarious / bananas. We have our own little research thing that we do. We kind of scan the internet, and we found this thing. We call it Turbo Pig, which is my favorite term. It looked like we found a ICS device that had like, it had like dirt, like it was like a pitcher, and then it had like a gigantic pig, and then it had above it, which looked like a turbo on a vehicle. So we called it, referred to it as Turbo Pig. And we had to do some research. I was like, guys, what is this? What's with Turbo Pig? I don't know what this is. But it was an ICS device in this Chinese pig farm that was gathering and measuring the methane gas excreted from the pigs. And you could elevate and change the oxygen level of that pig farm because it was isolated. So you technically could, didn't, you know, in Minecraft, turn off all the oxygen and all the pigs die. And they connected that to the internet. I don't know why, but Turbo Pig.
Yeah.
Well, hashtag Turbo Pig.
That's kind of interesting. I used to work for an external attack service management company, and they found one of the HMIs for some ICS controls open to the internet, no password.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, I feel like we're finally getting there. We still have computer breaches, network breaches, but I feel like ICS is finally getting and developing there. So I would say there's a lot out there. Any other thing you'd like to highlight? Because, you know, stay with us. We're about to break down how we do these critical infrastructure, I'll call them assessments, to help better your environment. You can take this home. So what else kind of sticks out to you about ICS vulnerabilities?
Yeah, I think one of the things too is as far as like the maturity of pen testing those environments, because people really typically didn't get the opportunity to do that. So I think that's one of the areas that's kind of fairly new, and I don't think there's a lot of people that do that.
Yeah, yeah, and again, I think kind of from my experience, me doing a lot of those, we'll talk about it, these critical infrastructure assessments, is that the people that utilize and support these are definitely not dumb people, but that would call them traditional engineers, not IT engineers. They're chemical engineers. They're electrical engineers, which they know their stuff way beyond my knowledge. But they're utilizing the technology of a network cable, and they don't understand exactly they understand what an IP address, but they don't really know what that exposed them to. And I think that's kind of the learning curve from that. And that's been my experience from a lot of vulnerabilities come from.
Yeah, that seems like one of the bigger risks. If those environments are isolated, then you don't have as much to worry about. But there's so many cases that you see, you know, traditional shadow IT in other areas, and it gets more critical. Say like someone puts up like a Wi-Fi access point to access something, they're not coordinating with IT or the OT administrators and security, and then you've got that open hole.
Yeah, and kind of to that, I was working for, you know, electrical company, and we were doing a just a random scan. It's kind of part of the assessment we're going to share here in a minute. Is we ran for called, I call it rogue node. That's what I call it, a rogue AP. And we did a full like wireless assessment, walking the whole property. I mean, this is like, I don't know, I'm going to say like a 15-acre plant for this electric company. And they had a few ICS devices that did some type of, I don't know, insert electrical engineering terminology. But the desktop support guy said the switch failed. So we brought a new switch from, I don't know, Walmart, Best Buy, something generic. And it auto has Wi-Fi on. So we were able to connect to these ICS devices that transfer power for about, man, I'm going to say, I think I'm around 3 million people just in the specific area. And you could access those ICS devices from the parking lot via Wi-Fi.
Oh, wow.
That's what they said.
they said something else.
Yeah. They said, oh, wow, Donovan. Insert explicit. Beep, beep. All the beeps. Need the beeps. Thank you, Todd. All the beeps. So it's something people don't really think about. And it's kind of was eye-opening to me, because it is a lot of security companies will hesitate because they don't do it, because they don't understand it. Because I feel how we've been able to really get in this market and help a lot of traditional companies, whether it's chemical, electric, water treatment, facilities, is that a lot of people do traditional pen testing where they break stuff almost. And I'm just kind of confirming with you, a lot of people that say, we did a ICS pen test or whatever, SCADA, there's many qualifiers, OT, we're doing all the terms, whatever you're into, is that it's not really a pen test, because if you actually did some type of, we'll say, commands to a certain ICS device, it could collapse and cause massive issues. So I would say that's a huge thing. When people say, yeah, man, we do pen testing for ICS, I'm like, oh my gosh, tell me about pen testing for ICS or OT. And I have them kind of dial that down. And a lot of them are kind of full of shit. So I mean, kind of back me up on that, right?
Yeah.
You can't do a traditional pen test, even if you're running your scanner. So it will shut down that ICS device because it is legacy and it doesn't understand the commands. We're like trying to pen test an old ass switch that just gets DDoSed by Nessus.
Yeah.
And it just dies. So,
and that's something interesting that you bring up, because I've done pen tests before where I was running MassScan and accidentally rebooted some legacy firewall. So you can just imagine those environments, what could be done just a port scan. Yeah.
Like this, I'm going like way back at, like, you just spin up like your Merc or Irk server and just ping a death it. I feel like it's so delicate, you know, it just can't handle the request load and just collapses.
And I think the knowledge there is so limited from security professionals and IT folks that support the overall infrastructure. They don't have that OT experience and understand that.
Yeah. And it could be, I would say it'd be pretty daunting coming from IT to OT before I had that, a different transition. But I mean, you just can't handle it the same way, because you can't push updates.
No.
Like, you know, I work for a group, which I thought was awesome. They're like, dude, we have NAC. I'm like, oh, dude, yeah, you have NAC. That's awesome. They're like, it's cool now. I'm like, no, what happened? They're like, well, we push NAC to the entire district and shut down our machines for a fucking month. Yeah. Because what happened was, is the MAC addresses weren't uploading, connecting correctly with the NAC, and they couldn't figure out in these old devices where it was or how to configure that for the NAC to actually connect correctly. Mm-hmm. So that was not fun for them.
Yeah.
But they tried, and hey, they did pull it off, but man, holy crap. A whole production area down for a month. I'm sure a lot of people did not get fired in that scenario.
Yeah. I would have hated to have been those guys.
Yeah. Yep. So, I think that's the scary balance. And I think that's a true valid, give nothing but high fives to the security team, because they were doing what they know and what should be done for that, because that is scary. But on the same time, it's so delicate, so legacy, it's hard to kind of facilitate that.
Yeah, it seems like it gets down to more segmenting those environments.
Yeah.
Making sure, and then physical controls are in place.
Yeah, so kind of good note on that. Me kind of going down what we do, and what I recommend, whether you work in Alias or any other company, this is some great qualifying questions, is and then how do you go about doing not a pen test, well, I'll call it a risk assessment for OT, ICS environment. As we've already discussed, like, you got to be careful changing stuff because you could bring down the whole environment, which is devastating. And that's when you got to go and print your resume, make sure the printer's working. That way, you know, you can protect yourself. But like, the first thing is a physical assessment of the fence. So you've been there with me many a times. What are you looking for? We're starting way out. We're carving the onion outside to inside. Tell us about the fence. What does that mean?
Yeah, we're just looking for any kind of, you know, physical damage to the fence. Say the fence is cut or something, and someone's able to bypass that. Maybe there's sections where, you know, barbed wire is not over the top of it. Someone could get in. You know, kind of like one of the assessments that we went on together, we saw some of those gates. There was like no barbed wire over it, so someone could have climbed up on top of there, even use like some of the turnstiles as ladders to get across there.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you don't know kind of turnstile, that's, I always call it, it's like a weird cattle thing where you have to go one at a time. And I was like, we were there and me and you were staring at it, and I was like, hey, this little turnstile. So it kind of goes like this. If you guys are watching on the YouTubes here, it does this little thing, kind of rotates. And I was like, holy crap. So I just started climbing up the bars as a ladder, and they had no barbed wire there on top to, protect from that happening. And that was to a public road. But we did learn from that. And how does, if that does happen for physical, how does someone protect from someone jump? What would be your recommendation?
Yeah, you'd need to put some barbed wire over that to prevent someone from being able to climb on top of that, because it was a flat surface and would have been easy for someone to climb up on.
Yeah, or poisonous snakes. Yeah. Either way, you know, with a warning sign, that way they know poisonous snakes, or razor wire.
Electrify it.
BTFO.
That could be fun.
Or electrify. It's true. Yeah. Don't pee on this fence. And that way everyone's privy to what's going on. So we've had a lot of that. I've even had a few places traveling that they were like, oh my God, I've worked here for like 20 years. I've never noticed that. Was like razor wire was backwards, which was the most hilarious thing ever, because they were like, I was like, yeah, man, they keep you in here to work. They're not trying to get people out of here. It's razor wire that was leaning into the company, not out, if that makes sense. Pretty funny.
So that wasn't a union shop.
It was exactly. I was on a few of them. And another one of my favorite physical stories was, I was checking out this plant, and I was like, man, that's, you're trying to do the physical assessment, because that is super important, by the way. That is number one. You got to start there. Whether we're picking locks or whether we're scooting under a fence, I had two good stories. The first one was, I went to this new facility and they had a great fence. And we talk about the bottom. There's a wire that needs to go under it to basically hold the fence together and down. That way you can't pull that up. And they had it wrapped up amazingly. And then I go around to the new generator, and then they have these two like window fences. And I'm like, what is going on here? So I just like crawled under it and then just opened the fence. But they spent all this money on this new, this fence was like 2 months old and it was super secure, except for the gate that just, you could crawl under, because there was a space like this big.
Oh, wow.
And it's not like I was like, oh, trying to, I just was like, no, I could like literally can just roll under this. I'm not even trying to be like, and it was next to their full generators for the building and also had a backdoor access to the facility. But they took all this effort to protect everything, but just like, I don't, you know, does that make sense? Like, that's why it's important to kind of have that second hand. And, you know, a lot of people are like, dude, I've never noticed this. I've been here for years. I didn't know this was here. Like, we have just gaping holes. We had another place we were at that the fence was great, but except this one part, it was all punched down and squished. So the oil filled service company next to them, I guess someone just doesn't know how to, they're not forklift certified is probably what it is. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And they were backing up their forklift and just jamming in their fence and knocking it down while they were doing their pallets and stuff next to the facility.
Wow.
And this facility made ethanol. Kaboom, if that makes sense. So physical security is like number one. about that. Any other thing that you learned from that? I got another story, but just kind of interested maybe if people don't kind of recognize that.
Yeah, I think it's a good reason why companies need these type of assessments. How you mentioned people work there 20 years or whatever, and they're going by this, they just don't pay attention to it. And that's not their area of expertise. So they may see these gaping holes literally and not thinking a thing about it. And so that's one of the reasons they need to bring someone in that's experienced in that area.
Yeah. And then, again, my last little story on the physicals, we have a few other topics to get to. Again, was my favorite at this other, it was actually an electric plant, and they had a coal railroad, right next to it. And, the facility was pretty knocked down. So then I was like, you know what? Railroad track. You know what? I'm going to do it. I'm just going to walk this road. I'm going to park my car. And I'm going to walk. I walked a mile down this railroad track. And then I finally get close to the plant and I'm like, oh man, the gate's open. And I'm like, the gate's not only open, they have chained the gate open. So I walk the tracks. They have another facility, kind of a gate over here that's kind of for public access. But anyone could walk on this electric plant, easy peasy, because they have the gate literally chained open. I'm like, this is crazy town. So then I just start going on site with no PPE in a very safe walking area. And I'm just waving at people. They're just like, what the fuck? You know, like I'm waving it. I'm not wearing any PPE. I'm just a guy in a hoodie. Maybe was wearing this one, probably the one on the side. And they just kind of waved at me. And then I walked all the way to the business side of and just walked in the back door.
Wow.
And I was like, and they were like, well, we don't really think, I mean, okay, that could happen. I was like, what if I was a homeless guy and just fell into your plant?
Yeah.
They were like, oh.
Or what if there are kids out there playing around?
Yeah. Just on the railroad track. Yeah. And they were just, the great people, they just were like, you know what? I never thought of that. I was like, what if someone fell in your plant? They were like, it would go kaboom. I was like, yeah, maybe we don't just chain an automatic fence open. But they didn't think about that because it wasn't part of the road. Mm-hmm. Why would anyone walk a railroad track to get into a plant? I don't know. Why does anyone do anything they get hurt with, you know?
Yeah.
So, and they had that, I think, for like maybe at least 10 years.
Wow.
So the physical side. So in your opinion, we got the physical, we're doing the onion. Next approach, I'm going to do with, what would you think that would be? Not a trick question.
Yeah, I think getting into the logical things, just kind of how you're connecting that infrastructure to the rest of your network.
Mm-hmm.
I would say making sure that you're performing some kind of segmentation. And if you have any kind of jump servers into that environment, make sure those are secure. And that's one area that you could test, do a little more testing on as outside of that jump server to see if you could get past it, not get into the environment, but to see if you could get past the jump server.
Sure. And kind of adding to that, which people forget is in IT, is the physical access, the card stuff. People don't actually associate that CCTV aspect. As part of the assessment that we do, we make sure all the cameras are working because sometimes they're like, yeah, they're working. I'm like, but can you rewind it? They're like, no. I'm like, okay, well, then it's not working. If someone breaks in, like, we can't identify that. And they also don't recognize that we're talking fences and we're talking, you know, digital connection. They're not catching that the CCTV and the Procmar or whatever kind of card they got is actually connected to IT.
Mm-hmm.
And there, it should be segmented, but typically it's not. So what is connected, like you said, logically on the network, what exposes us? Because you could go in there, which I have done, it's funny. It's definitely funny. I was able to plug into a wall. I was able to identify the Procmark thing. So just so you guys know, on every badge, I'll show you this one here. And we don't put our ID on it because that's dumb. See this right here? Everyone puts their name in their face, and I appreciate you doing that because I know where you work and all this cool stuff. This is fine. This is ours. That's it. This is ours. So you can take this card and go into the machine. So I plugged in. I was able to get to the database. And all I have to do is enter in the serial number because that's what it is. It's an injected. When you hit it, it puts energy into this. It's like a bunch of copper. And you can put that information on here. And I put that Donovan was here, and I had a picture of me in the CEO's office, and that was my picture every time I would scan in a badge, and they couldn't figure out over the next 3 days how I kept getting in. I just said I was back. I was just piggybacking somebody. But when they finally came in for the access control, they had me in the CEO's office, and I was like just doing this. That was my picture, because it was supposed to be segmented. Mm-hmm. It was segmented. It wasn't, but that's what I was told. It's definitely segmented. So me compromising that the Badgerator also gave me access to the cameras, which also gave me access to the on-prem technology. And that was in Florida. That was a what the hell, they do biomedical stuff. But people don't think about that. We talk about separating. That's pretty terrifying. And you know, one little leak can bring you into the whole facility. So digressing here, going back to, we talk about badge stuff, make sure badge are working. Also check badge policy. Mm-hmm. Kind of talk about that. We kind of covered that. What would people check for badge policy to ensure that's actually getting done correctly?
Yeah. You just want to make sure only people that need access to those environments, because you may work around some facility, but there's no need to be able to get into generators or any of this manufacturing equipment or chemical processing equipment.
Yeah, and a big key for us, what we do is make sure if we're a guest or whatever, make sure that it because a lot of people just do it for like a day or 2 days. And my big complaint to multiple things was like, hey, I appreciate you putting me from like, you know, 12 a.m. to like 12 p.m. I was like, if I'm a guest, there's no reason for me to be on site well after 6. Like, it should be automatically termed. And that's a default, by the way, for a lot of badge information. You do it by the day, not by the hour. That's where you have to go in and make sure there's a template for a guest. Make sure the template for a employee, contractor, all those are different. It's always something to realize. And also, do a quick little audit to make sure that you don't have a bunch of cards floating around there that if they haven't been used in 30 days, maybe they deactivate. Mm-hmm. That just kind of by default, it's something you can kind of do for that. And also CCTV, which sounds silly. If you can't rewind it for the past, whatever, 7 days or 30 days, whatever it is, it'd be good to make sure it does that. Because if a crime does happen, you don't have the footage, then why do you even have a CCTV area? So kind of going that, we're taking the next steps. We got the fence. We got the access, physical access. And then in the inside, what would we look at to help kind of facilitate for these critical infrastructure? What are we looking for in the OT space or the ICS?
Yeah, I think any kind of network connectivity, mm-hmm, and any kind of access to any of the control panels like HMIs or PLCs, getting access to that, make sure that is protected. Even though you have access to that room, doesn't mean everyone should have access to that, because you could have cleaning people that come into that space and they don't need to be messing with the controls.
Right. And also kind of connected with checking for HVAC, right? Mm-hmm. We had a bit of a scare. We had an HVAC company come in and for this customer. And there was like a rogue AP. And I'm like, what is this? And it was just totally broadcasting. And it was actually a way for us to connect to the HVAC company, because it was the, quote, new style of way the things work. You can probably do it with an app or something, which I think is super stupid. I don't do that either with my sprinklers. No, I don't hook any of that up to my Wi-Fi. It's dumb. But you could pivot from the Wi-Fi and the HVAC to the network and gain network access to the facility based off that quick transaction. And no offense, the HVAC's not going to know that. All they know is they're reading instructions says you need a network connected device, and they're just going to connect it because they want to get paid, but they don't understand physical security or even the assessment that we do, because they may not know. So what's going on site and doing that top to bottom kind of clean has protected them from for sure definitely being exploited or their intellectual property being stolen. So that's kind of part of it. So also for the networking thing, we kind of do some light scanning, and we kind of verify. Let's talk about if finding vulnerabilities for people who find them on an ICS environment or an OT, how should they facilitate that? Like, how do they fix it? Maybe they do, maybe they don't. What's your 2 cents on that?
On that, you typically have to go back to the manufacturer and find if there's any kind of patches that could be done to it. Some cases not, but then it's coming up with some other kind of mitigating controls that you could put in place.
Yes. And I, you know, you nail it there, because a lot of people, even I always, this may sound silly, just go talk to the manufacturer. Even way back in the day when, you know, AV was really hot and it didn't detect something, put it back on them. Say, hey, this is your problem. It's a vulnerability. And once you put them on notice, it's also a little bit of CYA, because if you have put a provider on notice that their specific legacy product or ICS or OT device is vulnerable to something and you get hammered, I'm not an attorney, but I think there's some liability that can be based and handed off from that. That could also protect your company and your job. So it's always good to know maybe you can't fix it, but kind of assessing the environment will give you the basically the idea and the strength to make sure your, I don't know, your building doesn't explode. anything else on that that you would do kind of for kind of as the, on the we'll say we'll call it the OT assessment on that? Anything comes to mind?
Yeah, I can't think of anything else.
Okay. Well, and then we have a few other things. I guess we talk about, you know, doing the scanning and stuff and make sure that's safe. I also recommend making sure that you have separate, the big risk out there that people are pretty scared of, which they should be, is the fact that you have OT and you have IT. A lot of IT groups get compromised from ransomware or at least threat actors, and you can protect yourself, we'll say publicly, financially, to ensure that there is, I'm going to use the buzz term, the air gap is real and it actually is separated from the OT and the IT, because once they get into IT, they get into OT and they can cause a lot of damage, and not only your company damage, but also could hurt people and maybe kill some people. So it's always important to have those. So going back to the you know, OT assessment of this stuff, you know, you have your fences. And again, this may sound generic, but this is where a lot of it happens. You have threat actors, you have a fence, you have your card entry. Make sure that you don't have doors that come open. I went to a facility that in order to get in the door, it was locked, but you just push this green button outside and then the door opens. So pretty wild. Mm-hmm. The next part is are we logging the door buttons? Do we have a camera out there? So all of those cameras could help facilitate entry points to help protect the company. And then you have the network to make sure it's segmented correctly. Make sure you don't have any, make sure you can't just randomly plug in. And if you get access, can you get generic like printer access, server access, ILO? Is there a machine that has a decided because someone, because an engineer wanted to make his life easier, he went right-click and shared his whole C drive to the entire network, which happens. Mm-hmm. Because their job, those type of engineering heads, is to ensure that stuff is working as opposed to stuff is being secure. And I think having those going through and also your firewall rules, is it important for someone to be able to, I don't know, be able to touch your environment from, you know, Columbus, Ohio, when you're in Denton, Texas? That doesn't make any, it's probably not a good idea. There's probably no reason for that. And having those firewall rules also evaluated to ensure that real traffic is not, it's also reduced with from the overhead, but also is the correct traffic based off of segmentation you talked about earlier. And I think that's super, super key for that. So I guess that's our points for that. And it really want everyone to learn and understand that this is a kind of a new frontier. We've been doing it for a few years now, but we've been keeping it pretty close to the chest. But I feel like there's been a lot happening that I think it was time for us to kind of go public about it and know that there's a lot of safety hazards out there that need to be addressed. And I want, obviously, sure, A-List to do what we do, but also I want the community to be safe. And if you have any questions or ideas or, you know, other companies that can assist with this, because I want my critical infrastructure to be safe as well. So kind of going last through for that, what do you see going into the future for OT? Any risks or any ideas? You can talk about aliens. I'm cool with that. Whatever, your laser beams. Like, what are you seeing as us going into this year, it being early 2024? Any threats in the OT ICS environment?
Yeah, I kind of think there's threats there, because as we have different things going on around the globe, and you know, some country gets upset because you're supporting this country, and then they kind of attack you. So I think I could see the possibility of that stuff for happening more often. And then just back to kind of what they term killware, how leveraging ransomware and some of those critical infrastructure environments, because yeah, you know, you think of some bank or something or hospital that you inject with ransomware, but then you get into critical infrastructure, then things get kind of scary there, and people are more likely to pay ransoms. And
yeah, and again, I think it's we're at that point now where kind of maybe leaning even more into your point that I think the threat of life is coming into play more, mm-hmm. which is pretty scary. Like you just talked about hospitals and even, you know, critical infrastructure stuff exploding, and that can have a huge impact on the environment. You know, there's been a lot of random explosions last year, which was, I don't know if it's random. I'm, again, tinfoil hat guy. I feel like we're just behind in that, and there's probably been some potential intentional and unintentional manipulation of our OT or ICS environment in the United States. Mm-hmm. Because even generically, people, I'll give you a hilarious another example. We are scanning the internet. Again, we talked about our tool, WeGo, because we try to understand threats and stuff for ICS. And we found I forget what it's called. It's where people, when they die, they are turned to dust.
Oh, crematoriums.
Yeah, it was a crematorium. It was a machine that we had full access to. For some reason, they decided to plug this into the internet. And it had a picture of it. And you could turn it on. You could change the temperature in it. I don't know why you would ever connect that to the internet, but it was. And that just lets me know that the world doesn't understand what they're connecting to the internet.
Yes.
It had two little things you could do, number one and number two. So, yeah. And I'm thinking the name. I'm looking at Todd like he knows. He's back here. By the way, Todd, thank you for doing all these podcasts. He's the unannounced superhero. The crematorium. I'm trying to think. I think that's, whatever. Bananas. So what I'm saying is like, when you're doing these type of OT assessments, you have to really, I think first step is to kind of minimize your attack surface. And I think that's pretty much everything, but also assess it, because now we have active actors trying to attack these critical infrastructure products to damage the United States and their position in the world. And again, I wanted to really do this. It meant a lot to me providing this to the public and to make sure that we're protected.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any last words or?
Yeah. I took a ICS pen testing course through SANS back in 2020, but I've learned about some resources. So Idaho National Labs has some good information on OT and ICS security.
Yeah.
And they even have like a free course that you can go there and go on site, and it's free. And they take you through that. And that's supposed to be pretty good. Actually, the time I took the SANS course, that was another option too. But like when you go on site for those, they do like a red team, blue team operation where you attack and defend type of scenario.
Nice.
Where you're working in an OT environment, learning how to secure and protect against attacks and also perform the attacks.
Awesome. You know, and I think you kind of nailed it there. Education's the way. There's not a lot out there. I'm familiar with the SANS, and as you know, they have a few companies kind of building that, but it's a new frontier, and it's kind of nice to see the world kind of adapting and understanding, like running water. Like, it's just kind of crazy that we're more concerned, as we should be, about our servers and our data, but like, what about the water? That's important. We need that. And us kind of turning that dime and facilitating and focusing on that makes me feel better. So in closing, any last words?
No.
Perfect. Well, again, we appreciate you. I hope that you've learned a lot today. If you have any questions or comments, comment or whatever, you're always welcome to reach out to myself or Philip on LinkedIn. We cherish and we enjoy when people reach out. Any questions at all in cybersecurity, or obviously in this case for the OT cyber industry, we're here to help. We're here to protect our infrastructure for the United States, and we want to educate and help anyone do the better they can with these assessments and help improve our quality of life. Thank you for your time. This is the I'm Donovan Farrow, Philip Wiley over here, my homeboy, and this is Secure AF Podcast. Thank you.